This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Today's show will be one for the books, because it's all about books. Our friends at the Litography Project have been documenting literary history and culture in the Bay Area and sharing stories with us here on Cross Currents.
Ah, the Litography Project!
Shh. Your guide to the literary Bay Area.
Let's start by heading up to Calistoga. Most people who visit the town at the top of the Napa Valley come for the wine and the spa treatments. Few come for the literary history. But they could. One of the most romantic honeymoon getaways ever written about happened right near there 135 years ago. Instead of mud baths and geysers, picture an abandoned mining shack infested with snakes, poison oak, and rusty nails. Now picture a sickly writer and his new wife spending their first 2 months of married life living there. Sounds crazy, right? But that's exactly what Robert Louis Stevenson, author of the famous children's book Treasure Island, did. So how did his honeymoon change the course of literary history? KLW's Sarah Stodder brings us this story.
It all started with a dark-haired American beauty named Fanny Osborne.
Robert Louis Stevenson came to California for love.
That's Marissa Schleicher, executive director at the Robert Louis Stevenson Museum in St. Helena. She tells me that before he met Fanny, Robert Louis Stevenson, or Louis, as his friends called him, was just a rebellious young boy trying, and failing, to make it as a writer while living on his parents' dole. In the spring of 1876, he goes vacationing in a small French town with friends.
There is a married American woman there with her two children. And it turns out that this is the woman Stevenson will fall in love with.
Fanny lives in San Francisco, and when she goes back, Stevenson drops everything to follow her to America. On the journey, he gets sick. Scholars think he had either tuberculosis or a genetic disorder, and develops a skin condition he calls the itch. By the time he arrives at Fanny's door, he's in pretty bad shape.
He looked like he was about to fall dead. He lost so much weight, he was about 80 pounds, his clothes were falling off his body, and his entire skin had been rubbed raw because of the itch. It looked like he had been flayed, almost. And Fanny thinks, my God, what have I done?
The San Francisco fog only makes Stevenson's lungs worse. He even starts composing poems about his imminent death, like this one, which he called Requiem.
Under the wide and starry sky, dig the grave and let me lie. Glad did I live and gladly die, and I laid me down with a will.
Finally, Fanny gets a divorce, moves Stevenson into her house, and nurses him back from the brink of death. They get married in the summer of 1880, as soon as he can make it to the church.
Stevenson and Fanny are adventurous sorts. They always have been. And so they kind of come up with this idea, oh, wouldn't it be fun to spend time in an abandoned mining town someplace?
And so, even though Stevenson is still weak, and they have Fanny's 10-year-old son, Lloyd, in tow, the newlyweds make their way by ferry and stagecoach to Calistoga for their honeymoon. A place, they're told by friends, with less fog and lots of restorative sunshine. When they get there, they hear about this place called the Old Silverado Mine. As the name suggests, it had once been a promising silver mine, but boom and bust had left it decrepit and abandoned. Stevenson has a good feeling about it, though, as he writes in his journal.
As from every point in Calistoga, Mount St. Helena could be seen towering in the air. There, just where the eastern foothills join the mountain, was Silverado. The name had already pleased me. The high station pleased me still more.
And they realize, huh, this will be perfect. We can stay in an abandoned mining town, basically squat there since no one really owns it, and they won't have to pay anything to stay there.
But Silverado definitely has quirks. The wooden shack is built right up against the mountain so that all three rooms have to be entered through separate doors on top of each other. Imagine climbing through your third floor window in order to enter your bedroom. A layer of dirt covers the rusty mining equipment strewn all over the house. Worse, there's poison oak sprouting up through the floorboards. In Stevenson's published account, he's the one who roots it out. But in his unpublished letters, he admits Fanny deals with it.
Fanny had forgotten to put oil upon her face and was promptly poisoned with poison oak, the curse of this country. No offense to rattlesnakes or hairy tarantulas.
Despite her own terrible case of the itch, Fanny makes the best of their new home.
I put in doors and windows of light frames covered with white cotton, with bits of leather from the old boots for hinges, made seats and beds, and got things to look quite homelike.
Once Fanny gets the house in order, Stevenson begins to recover from his illness. Fanny describes their newlywed routine in a letter to her mother-in-law with more detail than most people might offer.
Every morning, he lay naked in the sun, browning one side and the other, finishing with a rubdown of oil.
Stevenson also spends his time playing with Fanny's son, Lloyd. The 10-year-old boy is delighted when Stevenson makes up adventure stories, especially stories about pirates.
He had read Defoe and different tales of the pirate golden age. And so when he's playing with Lloyd, of course, with the history of pirates off of the coast of California, they start these imaginary games here.
After months of pirate games on Mount St. Helena, Stevenson starts hatching an idea for a book that changes his family's fortunes forever.
Treasure Island, the story which thrilled 200 million readers throughout the world.
We can take this ship right now.
Then I say cut their throats. And I say there'll be no killing till I gives the word. Shipmates.
Shipmates.
It's a story of buccaneers and buried gold, told from the point of view of a young boy who comes of age through a swashbuckling adventure. All his life, Stevenson has written unsuccessful travelogues and essays, but this new book is different. Marissa says his stay at the Silverado Mine is a big part of the reason why.
He sees this beautiful landscape. He wants to create these tales to entertain his new family. It really helps evolve his writing to being an author who takes the world around him and synthesizes it into an enjoyable romp for everyone.
When it's published in 1883, Treasure Island is an instant hit, and Stevenson becomes an international celebrity. At the height of his stardom, he publishes the journal from his honeymoon on Mount St. Helena, which he calls the Silverado Squatters, and it flies off the shelves.
Really, Lewis was the first one to bring this neck of the woods out to the world. During the entire time he's here, he's writing about what he sees, the people he meets, and keeping a very specific journal that he plans to turn into a book, so that by the time it gets published, it's kind of the first international PR for the region.
Schramsberg is one of the two wineries visited by Stevenson in Silverado Squatters, and from reading his book, it looks like he had a good time.
So local, so quintessential is a wine, that it seems the very birds in the veranda might communicate a flavor, and that romantic cellar influenced the bottle next to be uncorked in Pimlico, and the smile of jolly Mr. Schramm might mantle in the glass.
Though no one knew who Stevenson was at the time, the winemakers were quick to capitalize on the anecdote once he became famous. Here's Matthew Levy, marketing manager at Schramsberg.
It paid off for Schramsberg for sure, and this really was a international platform for them to utilize.
And it wasn't just Schramsberg. All of Napa Valley received a publicity boost from Silverado Squatters. The welcome sign still features a quote from Stevenson, who once described Napa's wine as bottled poetry.
Californians loved him. They loved that he loved California and he loved being here. And so the people of Napa County and the people in San Francisco and Monterey, they just were big, big fans.
They were such big fans that in 1911, long after Stevenson and Fanny were gone, a women's organization in Napa County erected the stone tablet that marks the spot where their honeymoon shack once stood.
Turn left onto California 29 North Robert Louis Stevenson's historic trail to Silverado.
In a quiet canyon on the side of Mount St. Helena, I hike past the stone tablet and further up the hill in search of the old Silverado mine. It's a tough climb. I have no idea how the very weak Stevenson did it. But I finally reach the mouth of the mine shaft on a hill overlooking the spot where the honeymoon shack used to be. It's cool and dark, covered in powdery red stones, no silver to be seen. There's something peaceful about it, though. an old wooden miner's cabin, convertible double bunk beds in a room with a view, fog-free weather, endless pirate games. Come to think of it, that does sound like the perfect honeymoon. For Cross Currents in Calistoga, I'm Sarah Stoddard.